Pushkin. Hi, I'm Phil Donahue.
And I'm Marlo Thomas. And we're going on a series of double dates to find out
what makes a marriage last. It was a beautiful summer afternoon the day we took a short walk to the home of Kelly Ripa and Mark Consuelos on Manhattan's East Side.
Having arrived at their four-story brownstone, we got to experience firsthand what countless audiences have seen on the small screen, this couple's funny, playful, and truly affectionate connection to each other.
They showed us into a very proper living room, where we sat across from each other at a table filled with goodies.
They look so young. It's hard to believe they're old enough to have been together 25 years. I've read some bits and pieces about them through the years, so I was looking forward to filling in their story.
We met when we were really young.
How old were you?
24.
And what about you? Did you have a place then?
Yeah, I was living on my own. By that point, I hadn't had roommates in a couple of years. I was living in my own apartment. And
you were kind of you had a steady job. Right?
Yeah, I was on a soap opera. I was on All My Children. Right. That's where I met Mark. I screen tested him.
Oh, really? You were in the screen test?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I met him the day before the screen test. But I had seen his picture before. The casting director,
they showed you.
She said, I think I found our guy. She said, he's green, he's never done anything, and he's in Tampa, Florida. And I was like, you're kidding. And she shows me this picture. And I thought to myself, I'm dazzled. I am dazzled by this person. And I don't get dazzled. A headshot is a headshot. I mean, how many headshots have we all seen?
It wasn't a particularly good headshot either.
I was dazzled.
Even in a bad shot, you were dazzling.
And so they brought him in a day early because he had never done a screen test before. I had curlers in my hair. I hadn't been in makeup yet. I looked like a disaster.
You had a pimple covered up.
I had a pimple coming up on my...
But covered, it was covered up
with... It was covered up with like medicine. You know, it was like toothpaste or something on the pimple. And I walked into the room and there was the headshot.
Were you dazzled when you met her?
Of course.
But I don't know that.
He's being polite. You know, you go from living in Tampa, getting off a plane, and then you're screen testing for a job that's going to change your life. I was, my head was spinning with, I can't believe this is happening.
Were you in Tampa because your family lived in Tampa?
They lived in Tampa, and I finished up my last 2 years of college in Tampa at South Florida.
Yeah, and your dad is Spanish and your mom's Italian?
Mexican-Italian.
Mexican-Italian. Yeah. And what are you?
I'm Italian, both of my parents.
You're kidding.
No, my mom's dad was Irish, so I think that's where I get my...
You're blonde.
I think that's a great combination.
It's a good combo, right?
I really think so.
Yeah.
He always says that Italians and Irish make the best kids.
Yeah. And I don't know why I say that. I can't prove it.
No, but I agree with you. Because I think my parents have, I mean, speaking about marriages, our parents have been married over 110 years, 120 years. Like, really? Our parents have been...
So you saw really good marriages.
Yeah.
Do you think that's helped?
Of course.
100%. Figure it out?
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you try to act the way your father acted to you?
I can't help it, but I'm sure I do.
That's a great combination. Nobody dominates.
I think in certain areas they would.
And what about with you two? Does one of you do the finances and one of you do something else?
Mark does... Mark is really the financial planner, and Mark is responsible for every good financial thing that's ever happened to us. I can't think of anything bad that you've done. Really.
Whatever.
I mean, financially. He's really got, like, that is a thing that... I said to him, remember when we first met, I said to him, I've never met an actor that's good at math. And he said, I'm a terrible actor.
That's hilarious.
I'm not that good at acting, but like, I'm really good
at math. He's really good at math.
Yeah. So I do kind of take that part of the role here. And she makes the home a home, like every holiday. We would have nothing if it was up to me.
It's funny because I think of us as so progressive as a couple. I always think of us like sort of politically progressive. We're more progressive people. And yet when it comes to our own family and our marriages and our roles, I think of us
traditional?
As very traditional and almost old-fashioned in our roles.
Because he does, because why?
Because he sort of, you know, he's made it so that I've never had to, like, leave home to work. Like, I've been able to raise my kids here in this city, in the nest, and maintain, and he's always been willing to travel and go to a set and go off here, and sometimes he's had to go live in another country to work on a set over there, and he's never like...
Some would say you made the sacrifice.
No, but I mean, you know, traveling is hard, and like being away from home is hard, and all of that is like, sometimes he would miss milestones for the kids, and that, I know that was hard for him. And he made it so that I didn't have to worry.
How did he make it? Because
we were agonizing. Who are we? What are we going to be? And the talk show opportunity came up, and he's like, you know, I think you should do it. It seemed so out of my depth and not in my wheelhouse and not what I was used to. And he said, you know, I think it will allow you to do the things that you've always wanted to do, which was really, I wanted to raise my kids. I didn't want to have them and never get to see them.
Right.
And the talk show afforded me this opportunity where I would work in the morning, early in the morning, and then I would have the rest of the day to take them to their activities or be there and watch the ballet recital and do all of those things.
Right.
And so in that way, we're very traditional.
Yeah.
You know, he made those sacrifices but I think, you know, he wouldn't know how to find a ballet class for the kids. He wouldn't know how to go signing the kids up for religion classes.
Right.
Like, he wouldn't know how to do that.
I don't remember how people's birthdays. She remembers every single person's birthday in our family, and they are taken care of every single time without fail. She reminds me to make calls. It's your dad's birthday. You have to call. I mean, you remind me of all that stuff.
But tell Marlo and Phil the conversation you were having with me today, because going back to what you were saying about learning from your dad.
I think I was maybe like around 20 years old, and I just moved back home, and I had a horrible breakup. And I was, you know, we talked a lot. We spent a lot of time together, you know, driving to soccer practice. He'd take me, you know, we spent a lot of good time together. And I was saying, this is it. I'm never going to get in a relationship again. I don't want to get married. I don't want to have kids. I'm just going to be by myself, you know? And so he said to me, I know you're going to be successful, and not being able to share that with someone is very sad.
Hmm.
You're going to want to share it with someone.
Oh.
You know, there's nothing more sad than an older guy by himself.
Right.
And I didn't believe him. I go, yeah, all right. Well, I'll be by myself. And I walked away. And I didn't believe it, and then I believed it.
All my girlfriends got married. I was a bridesmaid a million times. And I thought, great, I'm going to be an actress. I'm free. I'm going to London to live for a year and do a play. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. You know, it just wasn't right for me. And then I met Mr. Blue Eyes here, and it was like, maybe I do like this.
I can't picture the two of you without each other. Like, to me, it's like, you know, it's like
we're the best.
That's, yeah, you really are. Peanut butter and jelly.
I know.
It's so good.
I remember us having a very funny conversation because Kelly was very independent and lived in the city for about 5 or 6 years before I got there. And she was, you know, on her own and she did her thing. And then when I came in, you know, I am a traditional guy. Like, I feel like there are certain roles. It's hard to explain exactly what those roles are, but we had a conversation where I said, "Hey, listen, there's really only a room for one man in this relationship, and it's gonna be me."
I think we were arguing over where we were going on vacation. It was something really. It was a luxurious problem to have, and I said to him, "I am a woman of this generation, and I've been on my own for a long time. Like I've not answered to my parents.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm a grown woman, and so you're gonna have to forgive me if it takes me a minute to keep up with the clock that you're rolling back before my, you know,
I forget what it was about, but we laugh about it now. It was kind of funny.
No, but it's a great conversation.
What I will say though is, I've watched Mark with our daughter. And the way you raise her to never take a backseat position to any person that she dates, any man that she dates. Like, it's funny, the evolution of you is kind of fascinating. When we first got married, I think Mark felt like he rushed into it and maybe he made a mistake and maybe he was regretting it. And he took my wedding ring and threw it out the window.
Whoa.
And then he turned around and I said, I'm still here. Because I really think he thought in that moment that somehow I would just go and like vanish or evaporate. And I was like, now what? And, you know, and I think it was like that moment of, oh my gosh, she is still here. And I just did that horrible thing. And she's still here. And she doesn't really seem that rattled, right? If I'm getting into your head in the moment.
That was a big move.
It was a big, bold move. And I think he was like
25 years old.
Yeah. But that's great. But that's people who are getting married are 25 years old. That's what this is about.
Yeah.
You know, you don't do that when you're 52. Or
exactly. 40,
you know. No, you don't.
And
I hope we don't.
But that was the thing. It was like I looked at him and I said, you know, I get it. Like, I get it. I'm young and married. I'm scared, too. Like, I get it. This is forever. I'm with you. Now we have to go find that ring.
And I did.
Oh, yeah. I love this story more than anything.
But that was like, that to me is like, that's a defining moment. I'm sure there are a lot of people that would have said,
I'm done.
That is outrageous. That is crazy behavior.
Right.
And I understood where it was coming from. It was like coming from a place of terror and genuine fear. And, oh my God, I have to spend the rest of my life with this woman who does not value time, who is chronically late.
Let me ask you this. What's the biggest challenge you think you've ever faced as a couple? Because what's important about that is how you come back from it, you know.
How do we get through trying moments?
Yeah, or something scary.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I think that one of us remains extremely calm.
Is it always the same one?
Nope. Mm-hmm. Nope.
No.
It depends on the situation. If it's happening to us together, we have got a moment like, oh my God, one of us stays calm, the other one freaks out, and we get through it.
I'm talking like family cancer when his mom was diagnosed with breast cancer, and it was like a scary time for us. And it was.
And your mom.
And then my mom got cancer, and my dad had heart surgery, and our parents were falling like dominoes. And thank God they're all fine now.
So but what did you do? This is so great because this is what everybody goes through.
Right.
We have parents older than us.
Right. Of course.
So
right.
Deal with it. So, how did you help each other? How did you? You know, like, did you get the news on the phone? And then what did the other one do? You know,
do you want to hear something really funny? We were with my mom when she was diagnosed. And Mark and my mom came home from the doctor. It was at 10:30 in the morning. I had just had my son, Michael, who is now 22 years old. I think I was still on maternity leave, which is why I was home. And you guys, and it was, I think, 10 a.m.? They opened a bottle of scotch. We had never, like, we kept a bottle of scotch just sort of like in case anybody ever asked for scotch.
We never
which
drank.
We had never, nobody ever said, do you have scotch?
Yeah,
we're like, you know, we didn't, it was in case anybody successful ever came over, we would offer them scotch. And they opened a bottle of scotch, and they both drank like a tumbler of scotch, and I had never seen my mom drink.
And you were crying. You were devastated.
And I was sobbing. And I called my sister, and my sister said, "I can't talk. Dad Dad collapsed, and I'm on my way to the hospital. He needs a bypass surgery."
Yeah.
And then
on the same day.
It's the same exact day. And I said to Mark, "Oh my God, we are cursed. We have to get a priest here. I mean, we have to bless, we need holy water. We have to burn candles." Like, I just couldn't believe it. It was on the same day.
And then when my mom was fighting cancer, Kelly, she took her into our home, and she lived with us for 7-8 months.
It was a long process.
And she would go to the chemo with her and the radiation with her and bathed her.
I owe it to my parents and to his mom. I owe it to them to take care of them the way they've taken care of us. I don't want to screw it up. I don't want to give them substandard care because they raised us. So they raised us in a way that is like,
my parents didn't raise you. And she does it. I mean, my dad.
You did it for his mother.
Yeah, and my dad comes to New York for his heart doctor, and she goes with him and sits there and takes notes for him and accompanies him. I mean, it's.
And where are you when she's doing that?
I'm in Vancouver working.
Oh.
Typically.
Right.
I'm not here, but she does it. She's like, I'm going.
That's great.
But that bespeaks a wonderful testament to your folks.
My mom gave me the best advice. She said, be good to your mother-in-law. She said, you treat your mother-in-law the way you would treat me, but nicer.
We'll have more after a quick break. We're back to our conversation with Kelly Ripa and Mark Consuelos. They seem so perfectly aligned. Marlo naturally wanted to know, how do they fight?
How you fight is something to learn. I mean, we had to learn how to fight. I am an immediate thing. I'm a firecracker that goes off right now.
Yeah.
He would simmer for a while and then explode. Mm. So it was a while for us to be able to align our temperaments to...
You have to feel safe, right?
Yeah.
You have to feel safe in the fight that know that, you know...
I realize that I am Phil and Marlo. I'm like, I simmer and then I explode
I sometimes I liken it to a kamikaze mission. Every now and then you gotta like, you know what? We're gonna fight.
Yeah.
And I'm going to... Let's go. Let's really have a blowout. And I know I'm gonna lose.
Why?
And because she's always right.
Oh, and wow. No wonder you stayed married. That's great.
And I know I'm going to have to apologize.
Yeah, because you tend to rise above it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when I go low, he'll go high.
Right.
And then I will somehow try to get a shovel and I'll try to dig myself. I'll try to dig lower. And he's like... So he still stays. You really have like maintained.
Oh, good. You noticed that.
I've always known. I admire it about you. It's like not.
But every now and then, you're
gonna blow.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll be amazed at like what he's willing to like die on, what cross he's willing, right? And I go, that? Really? I mean, like I'll fall asleep in the middle of some Netflix series, and I know it's not about Netflix, but the argument has been. I guess it's more of a Phil thing. It must have been simmering in there for quite some time.
Right.
You know, and he'll say, well, I've been waiting to watch this with you. I've been in Canada and I promised you I wouldn't watch it. And I've been waiting to watch it. And now you're asleep. But I know it's really not about that. It's probably about 7 arguments ago where I got my way or whatever.
No, but you know, we've had that argument as well. I've not done something because I wanted to do it with Phil and he'll fall asleep or he'll not want to go as he promised or whatever. And it actually hurts my feelings because I had built it up in my mind that this is something we're going to share together. And then then I feel like, well, I lost this thing I thought I was going to have. It's like having an ice cream sundae I didn't get, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of what it is? It's a disappointment. That's what I feel. What do they say? Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. You know, sometimes it just is. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
He wanted to share it with you. He's been waiting to share it with you. And you're bombed out. So the thing is not quite as much fun as it was.
Right.
Is that kind of... Yeah. Were you always comfortable sharing feelings with each other? Did one of you have to teach the other how to do that?
Interesting.
I was just, no matter what he told me, I used to have a conversation with myself. No matter what he's about to say, don't have any expression on your face. Because if you have an expression, he might clam up and he might feel ashamed of whatever he's told you or judged in some way. So I would be very mindful to not have any expression. at all. No matter what he said, the expression was always, you know, it was before I used to get Botox, before I got Botox, yeah. You know, it was like before, I don't even know if Botox existed at the time, but I mastered the art of having no expression
that
at all.
That is a great accommodation. See, yeah. That's what I call an accommodation.
It's a good, yeah. Because you don't want the person to think that they are being judged. You want your spouse to feel safe and know that in you they have a confidant, somebody that they can trust, somebody that's like going to walk through the fire with them, whatever it is. And P.S., anytime he had told me something, what I had built up in my, like anytime he would say, I have to tell you something, I don't want you to get upset. What my brain went to was so dark and crazy, I would say, he's about to tell me that he's disposed of a body once. But it was always like something so benign.
What do you think is the difference between your marriage and other friends' marriages?
Well, we have a lot, like we have, I have to say, my friend group, I have a lot of happily married friends. And I think that that is a great thing.
So do we.
Because I think if you don't, I think that can really spread like the unhappiness.
And I agree. Yeah.
And there are people, like there were people in our lives like early on in our friendship circles that would make us unhappy. And we would never figure out like quite why we would become unhappy around these people. And we realized they were in an unhappy marriage. And it was like the stress of feeling their unhappiness would somehow tap into our souls almost. Because
we like, end up getting in an
argument. We would get into an argument as soon as we would leave their home or leave the dinner table at the restaurant. And it's not like us to sort of like have a perfectly lovely evening and then fight on the way home. And we realized we were wearing their energy.
When things aren't going well, yeah. Which this happens.
Sure.
Yeah, all the time.
How do you reset?
Well, you think about what you did wrong and then you talk about it and you apologize for it. You apologize.
Even if you feel like you've done nothing wrong, I think you owe it to yourself and to your spouse to put yourself in the other person's position and see it from their perspective. Like, if we're at a dinner party, he'll make a comment, and maybe it's something that embarrassed me. But from his point of view, it was just funny, and it got a laugh or whatever. And from my point of view, I'm embarrassed. It hurt my feelings, right? And I think that that's something that Mark is really good about. Instead of like getting defensive, he'll say, you know, I didn't think that that would hurt your feelings. I'm so sorry. I did not mean to embarrass you.
Or I see what you mean.
Or I see what you mean. Like that's, I think that's like something that's a very kind, simple gesture.
That's one of the examples of I finally am getting marriage. I think that's a good example of because I didn't used to do that. I'd get really defensive.
Right.
I'd get really defensive about it. I'm like, I say everything wrong. I'm like, you know, or if I did apologize, I'd be like, I'm sorry if you're upset that I said that.
Yeah, that's
like
the worst.
Like an idiot.
I
would think that was a smart thing to say.
Somebody else, one of our other couples said that. Anybody who says, I'm sorry if that upset you is just full of shit.
Right.
They don't mean it. All, right. they're doing is saying, you know, you are pain in the ass, you're feeling upset.
Right. I'm right. Yeah.
But a real I'm sorry is I'm sorry I said that. Not right. I'm sorry if it upsets you.
Right.
And anytime you're coming from a place of I'm so selfless, I am sacrificing so much.
Yeah.
That is narcissistic thinking.
Yeah.
You really have to think
about it. And sometimes
about,
I'll come up to her and I go, okay, I'm totally looking for some attention. And I'm being completely selfish right now, but I need some attention. I'll call myself out, mm-hmm. and say, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I just need you to like humor me for a minute. And she does.
If you can tell your spouse what you need in the moment, it is the most helpful thing. Because, by the way, married people or people looking to get married, nobody's a psychic. Marriage is like a roller coaster ride, right? It really is. Mm-hmm. And there's these high highs and you're like, oh, this is great. The tickling in my stomach feels amazing. And then you like sink down to the depths and you go through things and you're scared. We've often said like if we had gotten divorced like so many times over things that at the time seemed like a huge deal, we would have missed out on so much life. And incredible moments and fun. And some of the reasons that we are enjoying, like, our adult lives now is like when all of our friends were going out and like out on the town and taking impromptu trips to tropical islands, we had small babies and toddlers. And we were tired and exhausted, and we would be sometimes short with each other, not really kind to each other. And we were not like taking the time for each other. And that could have easily frayed our marriage, and we could have easily turned on each other. But instead, it's sort of, we were just fortunate enough, and we listened to each other just enough. I used to leave the lid off the toothpaste, which drove him crazy. And I realized I was starting to do it deliberately to drive him crazy. And then one day I said, okay, are we going to have a nice marriage or are we going to be dramatic all the time? Put the fucking lid on. Put the lid on the toothpaste.
Right. You said to yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Put it on, Kelly.
See, I don't even remember
it's
you
not
did that.
Rocket science. Put the, just twist it on. You're leaving it off. I remember the moment I had that conversation in my own head where I said, go back and put that on because it's going to dictate what kind of a day you have. You're going to either have a good day or a bad day by that gesture.
Yeah, right.
When I think about some of the things that like we've argued about in our life and where we've like, that's it, we're getting divorced. And he's always like, he laughs at me whenever I've said that. He's like, oh, okay, we're getting, okay. I'll see you at the divorce court.
So what you're saying is when you go off like that or when you did go off like that, he was the one that was sort of say, oh, come on. Let's
calm down.
You're the peacemaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
It's those things that I find like when we've settled into our, like, our happy place, where we are now, so many years later, decades later, right? I find that the fact that I autonomously clean up after myself, I am on time for him. I do it for him, but I've also done it for myself now, right? And he does things that I know didn't always come naturally to him, but he does it now. Like, you figured out that I love gardenias, and they always come. There's never any reason. They show up once a week. He sends them to me just to let me know that he's thinking of me. And I remember the first time you sent them to me, I just thought that I thought he was about to tell me he had a secret other family because I thought, oh, this...
I love where her mind goes.
I said, these gardenias are so extraordinary. He's going to tell me had a child out of wedlock during our marriage.
Thank you. That's the one thing we didn't touch on, and is jealousy. I mean, you're both so friggin' good looking.
I don't have a jealous bone in my body, which is good, but he can be jealous, which is... I'm always so sort of... I'm sort of shocked by it because I'm somebody that I would not consider that somebody would get jealous about. You know, I'm like,
jealousy is not really so much about what the other person does.
Yeah, I guess
it's your own thing. You know, thing.
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah. And it feels horrible.
Oh,
are you both jealous?
Well, I am.
Yeah.
You know, she did a movie with Kris Kristofferson.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
He did. He came in the middle of the night. Can you believe this? So I'm sound asleep, and I hear this banging on the door. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, no, Christ, I got to be up like in an hour. Right. You know, for like 4:30 or something, whatever it was. And I open the door, and there's Phil. And the minute I saw him, I thought, he thinks Kris Kristofferson's here.
So that's my move.
I opened the door. I said, come in. I was so mad at him.
Right.
Because I had like another full hour.
Right.
You know, now you know I can't go to sleep. Because first of all, I'm aggravated that he would think that.
I'm aggravated and I'm excited. And you're here.
And he walks in and he goes, no, I just missed you. I said, oh, bullshit.
Phil. Okay, so let's get into it quickly. What if...
Oh, God.
What if... You come to the door, and Kris Kristofferson is there. What happens? Mm. Is there a fist fight? What happens?
I would probably walk out.
Yeah. I think you would run. I think I would have never seen you again. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You see, with Mark, there would be crime scene tape. There would be like police barricades, and there'd be a whole.
Me too.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because you did that a few times at our house.
Let's hear.
I would show up.
He would show up, and I remember one time I looked at him and I said, "Aren't you tired of catching me here actually doing what I'm saying I'm doing?"
I was doing a show in Boston, and we didn't have cell phones at the time, right? And I couldn't get a hold of her all day. And I got a really bad feeling.
And little green monster.
Yeah, it's horrible. And so, unfortunately, there are flights to New York from Boston every hour. And I got her finally on the, you know how they used to have those on the plane?
Yeah, for
and
sure.
So she said, "You sound funny." I'm like, "Nah, you sound fine. I guess it's just the phone."
He said, "What are you doing tonight?" It was a Friday night.
Were you married or not married?
Married.
We're married. What are you doing tonight? I said, "Believe it or not, I'm cleaning the toilets." I was like, I was cleaning. So he, for some reason, thought that sounded very fishy.
You didn't tell her you were on the plane?
No.
He wanted to catch me.
I love this.
And so I came in very much like, "Hey, what's going on?" No. She's so happy to see me.
He tells the doorman, he goes, call up to the apartment and tell her that there's a flower delivery.
Oh, and, that's so perfect.
And I was like, a flower delivery, and I'm so excited because I'm thinking, oh my gosh, he's sending me flowers. This is so nice. And I'm not kidding. I have like a Johnny Mop in one hand. I'm wearing a bathrobe. I am a disaster. I'm not how I want my husband to see me when he gets home from like his movie set.
Right.
And I open the door, and it's him, and he comes in. He doesn't even say hello
to
me. He's looking for something.
Yeah. He
does I go, "What are you?" And I'm still looking for the flower guy. I was like, "There's a guy coming with flowers."
It's a horrible feeling.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Well, wouldn't you say I'm less jealous these days?
Oh my gosh, yes.
There's no such thing as this perfect marriage. It's the crazy stuff that you get through together that makes it all the worthwhile.
That's Kelly Ripa and Mark Consuelos. It's great how they still seem to surprise each other.
Well, it'd be pretty boring if there were no surprises.
That's why I married you. Until next time, I'm Phil Donahue.
And I'm Marlo Thomas. Anyway, I know you're leaving tomorrow and you must be having a romantic night tonight. So
no, not having a romantic night, but...
Yeah, we're down to one kid now.
Double Date is a production of Pushkin Industries.
The show was created by us and produced by Sarah Lilly. Michael Bahari is associate producer. Musical adaptations of It Had to Be You by Stellwagen Symphonette.
Marlo and I are executive producers, along with Mia Lobel and Lital Molad from Pushkin.
Special thanks to Jacob Weisberg, Malcolm Gladwell, Heather Fain, John Schnars, Carly Migliori, Eric Sandler, Emily Rostek, Jason Gambrell, Paul Williams, and Bruce Kluger.
If you like our show, please remember to share, rate, and review. Thanks for listening.